A Good Omen, Spotfic, written by Entangled Now, read by Jar. Summary. In which Aziraphale just wants Crowley to know how sorry he is, and he's determined to show him. Aziraphale is trying his very best. There are many things he regrets in his long life, though some he wouldn't change because in part, large or small, they had contributed to where he is today. He had always assumed it would be the large things that would follow him, that would weigh on him most heavily. But since his return, since his final understanding that some things cannot be changed, perhaps should not be changed, he realizes that many small regrets can add up over time. The small regrets can add up until they don't feel small at all, until you feel all but smothered beneath the weight of them. He has come to understand that he is a bad friend. Not always purposefully, not always willfully, though sometimes it had to be said that was undoubtedly true. For all that Crowley had made mistakes, Aziraphale thinks that he has always tried to be a good friend, even if he was also a fiend who was a little too fond of rattling the chains that bound them both. Aziraphale loves Crowley for all the things he is and all the things he isn't, and he understands now horribly what it had meant to stand before him and ask him to be someone different. Perhaps worse than that, to forsake everything he had become over their long and ever intertwined lives. It had felt so very urgent at the time, choices made in the heat of the moment, selfish wishes offered up without thought. But he understands now, after existing in the many spaces of heaven where expectation never quite met reality, he finally understands what it was he had asked for. A large regret, to be certain, built on the back of many small ones over the years. It's there every time he looks for it. A history of Aziraphale's favorite wine and his favorite cakes, the place he wanted to see, the performances he'd heard others raving about, the laces and silks he'd insisted on, the markets and auditoriums, theatres and patisseries he'd made them visit, all of his likes and dislikes, his loves and his fears. A history of him, always remembered. Aziraphale could name things that Crowley liked, that he was fond of, that he enjoyed. But there were significantly fewer of them, the gaps where he'd never asked or never paid attention evident. Or perhaps he just hadn't been listening. Perhaps he had been moralizing and chastising and castigating. If their shared history could be called anything, then it must be called weighted in Aziraphale's favor. "You're quiet," Crowley says. It's not an accusation, just an observation, as if he wonders whether he needs to worry about whatever thought Aziraphale is so intent on. The hand that would normally be in Crowley's pocket instead knocks against the back of his own as they walk. The warmth of Crowley's knuckles is strangely new but fortifying. Aziraphale had been afraid that he'd given up the chance of that, the small touches, the physical acknowledgments that they were both here. He turns his hand slowly to let Crowley take his fingers. The thing about forgiveness is that it exists whether you feel like you deserve it or not. London is a little too grating since everything. And Aziraphale is finding more peace in some of the small tea shops that are scattered along the coast. Muriel had taken to the description of a reluctant bookseller more than Xerophil could have ever imagined. Especially as someone who had never collected or enjoyed books before, unexpected responsibility was thrust upon them. "I would like to ask you something, but I don't want to overstep." The wind had died at the opportune moment, and Xerophil finds that the words won't be held back any longer. Crowley's mouth works briefly, and Xerophil can see the phrase, "never stopped you before," being shaped and strangled back. Before, it would have been a tease, a thread attached to the tapestry of their history together. But Crowley is still being careful with him after everything that happened. He's so very kind about everything, for all the stiffness and the hurt. Xerophil doesn't think he deserves it, but he has no choice but to venture onward, desperately, hopefully, achingly. "Ask anyway. We said we'd do that now, talk about things, and overstep if we needed to." So they had. "Would you dance with me?" Xerophil asks quietly. Because he very much wants to. The first time it had gone so wrong, shuffling them into place with a quiet sort of desperation. Trying to make it happen, because he thought it should, when all he'd really wanted was a hand reaching out for his own. Crowley looks at him, eyebrows twitching together in surprise over the top of his glasses, which now feel ever present on his face. There's a softness there too, though, a quiet thing that looks like a smile the longer it stays. "Twice in a century, you said people talking." Xerophil finds that he doesn't care.
"We've never set much stock in what people think of us."
"Not people, no," Crowley agrees. Xerophil thinks there might be a layer of sharpness there, but it doesn't hit, doesn't sting like it should, and Crowley drifts closer. The hand he's holding, tighter than he means to, but not as tight as he truly wishes to, ends up between them. "We'll need some music, I suppose," Crowley says sensibly, eyes roaming sideways to where there are trees and hills and a small rocky wall crumbling low from age. His gaze is briefly searching, as if a tune might spring up from nowhere. "Can't get much of a mood going without a tune to follow." Xerophil was music once upon a time. But it's hard to dance to trumpets and the heralding of the host in a million angelic throats. He fears that will make him laugh if he thinks about it too much, so he makes himself stop. The truth of the matter is, they don't need a turntable, or tape deck, or Spotify, or any of those human devices that pluck songs out of the ether. All they need is each other. An older version of him might protest that there was no way for them to harmonize anymore. Demons and angels were by nature discordant when together. They could never hope to keep time. But Xerophil thinks that he finally knows better than that. He also knows for certain that he would rather be out of time with Crowley here on Earth forever than ring a single perfect note with another angel. The tea shop they'd walked from is back the way they'd come, nothing but hillsides and small lanes around them now. If they were to crest the nearest rise, Xerophil thinks, they would see the ocean. He can't help but feel like it's the perfect spot for them.
I think I can do something about that.
He waits for the wind to die down, for the sky to calm itself, though the drama is more for the show than anything else. He wants this to be perfect. He needs this to be perfect. Crowley raises an eyebrow, knowing him well enough to let the curious moment hang. It's a sort of trust, and it has enough of the flavor of years and years past that Aziraphale can't feel sad, that it still feels tentative. He takes Crowley's hand, the warm narrow bones of it already loved, for all they are not as familiar as they should be. He lets their palms slide, and then fold into a dancer's hold. Aziraphale lets Crowley lead, and he hopes he understands.
I will follow you. Always.
At first, there's nothing but the wind and the faint edge of a smile on Crowley's face. Aziraphale can't bring himself to interrupt the way it starts, their first movements together. It's slow but careful, steps back and forth across the grass, the simplest of dances, Crowley's longer legs keeping pace with him, fingers warm against his own. There have been so few occasions where they'd had the chance to stand so close. No other dancers to provide company, to leave a pretense of social obligation. Neither is there any music to provide any excuse. There's just them and the quietness of it. There's nowhere to hide, no games to play, no catastrophe to unwrangle. Aziraphale wants to be honest, but most of all he wants to give Crowley everything he deserves. And between one slow turn and the next, he lets the shape of his wings catch the light and shiver free. They hover in some place between existence and not. Like water down a pane of glass, they distort the world, drag the air into currents that weren't there before. Turning and stepping with Crowley on the grass, the currents from a pattern, another dance entirely, one that stretches behind Aziraphale and flutters across the rolling hills that bracket them. A dance spread out across the sky.
You were right. I was wrong. I'm so sorry.
Crowley is no longer looking at his face, eyebrows pinched in the middle, as he watches those vibrations roll in a way that they'd argued into existence centuries ago. Only this dance isn't small. It travels outwards like a wave for miles, rolling down the hills and slithering through the water that heads seawards. The cords of it coat the trees and monuments and houses as they pass.
You were right. I was wrong. I love you.
The movements sway and repeat, and Crowley's attention finally swings back to his face, his expression soft in a way that aches. Aziraphale's wings spread and fold and scatter the promise every time Crowley slowly twirls him, every time they dip and rise over and over without end. There are moments pressing together in the late sun where Crowley's hand grips his own tightly, as if to draw him to a stop. But Aziraphale has so much left to say, so many apologies left to voice. The herd of it knotted into a ball that he will not be content until he unwinds at Crowley's feet. The glow is almost hangable now, the faint suggestion of wings dismissed for something far more real. a twist and a stretch, pulling Crowley back into his arms.
You were right. I was wrong. I have never been more wrong.
The realization in Crowley's face is heavy in a way that hurts, but Aziraphale can't stop. He can't. They have never touched for so long. He has never held Crowley's hand for so long. His wings are so much stronger than he remembers as they lift and open, as they play a dance of apology, of atonement, of grief for what was lost, for what he'd squandered in a moment of madness to try and buy them a future. To try and do something alone when they'd worked so hard to become something new together. His wings fold briefly around them, both on a spin, leaving them in a hazy space that smells like ozone and peaches, before Crowley reaches up and catches the edge of one of them, drawing it down, effectively hauling Aziraphale to a stop.
Crowley, I'm not finished, he hurries out.
He's not prepared for the way. Crowley steps closer still, fingers curling, until Aziraphale has no choice but to turn with him, his wings bending uncomfortably in a tightening grip. But he has no thought to protest. Crowley has earned trust from him, for all that he has not always been worthy of it.
Crowley!
Take a breath, Angel.
What?
Crowley catches him about the waist, the grasp of his hands sudden and strong, his own wings snapping open with a crack as he launches them both upwards. Aziraphale is not prepared, instinctively tries to spread his wings and arrest their ascent, but Crowley's own bats them down again. Normally the idea of it would be unconscionably rude, but he submits, feels them climb higher, feels the clouds rush past and away. They are going far higher than Aziraphale is prepared for, so high that the streams of matter and energy he'd been pulling in to apologize to Crowley in a way that no words would be adequate for dissipate into nothing. It's not until they reach the very outer edges of the atmosphere that Crowley spreads his wings with a sharing, shuddering clap and brings them both to a stop. Shoes almost in a stars, Aziraphale finds that there's not enough matter here to do anything at all with. They hover, the edges of Aziraphale's wings chilling, the glow of earth below them, her atmosphere rolling.
Crowley, I was trying to...
I forgive you, Crowley says quietly.
I know, Aziraphale says,
the words escaping too fast.
You've told me.
But it had been so quick. He'd only managed to explain half of the why, and nothing that had happened in heaven had excused it. He just needs to prove how much he regrets what happened. Crowley's anger had been so brief. Embers kicked alight and then smothered just as easily in the aftermath. It hadn't felt like enough. I forgive you, Angel.
You said that already.
His voice is too full, too big. Angel, I forgive you.
I know, Aziraphale says desperately,
and he can feel tears freezing on his face, though he shouldn't be able to speak or cry at this attitude. The curve of the whole world hangs silent beneath them.
I know you did.
He knows that there's too much showing on his face. He knows that you are supposed to accept when someone forgives you, but he doesn't deserve it. Perhaps he doesn't want to deserve it.
Crowley deserves someone who will accept him wholly and completely, because he has never been anything else for as long as Aziraphale has known him. Crowley. The name is so precious to him, and he tried to erase it. He tried to convince Crowley that would be better.
I forgive you, Crowley says again. It's the first time he tries to pull away, but Crowley will not let him. He gathers him in and folds his wings around him in a snap of feathers, the static rustle like sparks on his exposed skin. Aziraphale has never been held so tightly, and it hurts.
It's all right if you don't forgive yourself yet. The words are pressed to his cheek, left against the chill of his skin. I'll be here, I promise. The words pull all the air out of him. It feels like choking, and then it breaks. He breaks, crashes against his oldest friend like a wave. But Crowley doesn't say anything. He just holds them close and lets them gently turn. Shoes stepping across empty space, wings brushing and swaying, and finally interlocking in what feels like perfect harmony. The end.